Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
Indeed, today is the day. It is the 21st of May. I don't know, that all kind of rhymes. I guess that rhymes every day of May. So you're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is the top of the second hour. And joining me now, Nicole J. Phillips, author of All Kinds of Good Things, but also Kindness is Courageous, 100 Stories to Remind You People Are Brave and Kind. You can find her online at NicoleJPhillips.com and pretty much on every social media platform as well. Nicole, you have caught someone doing something good.
And oh, so Carmen,
right. In anticipation of our conversation, I Googled what would be the antonym or the opposite of gossip, because what you and I are going to do is actually we're going to spend some time talking about catching people and catching one person in particular doing something good. Guess what I learned? Gossip does not actually have an antonym. I mean, it's like truth comes up, but there's not like a word that describes telling good on other people. So I think that you and I ought to set ourselves to coming up with a word that's the antonym of gossip, and then that should be our thing. So I'm putting it out there so you and I can like noodle on that for a while. Maybe our listeners have ideas. If you've got an antonym for gossip, like we need a new word. We need to craft a new word together here as a community of listeners and people on the Mornings with Carmen show. We're going to come up with a new word that's going to be the antonym of gossip, and then we're going to send Nicole J. Phillips out there with that word into the world where she's going to catch people doing good. So there you go. Who'd you catch doing good? Right?
Oh my gosh. You just gave me a whole plan for my whole week right now. I'm like, this is it. This is what I got to figure out. I love it. Yeah.
I am all about controlling other people's lives in this way. There you go.
For good. Always. Yes.
All right. Tell us, you caught somebody doing good. Who did you catch and what were they doing?
So I was in Chicago and I was walking down the street, downtown Chicago, and there was a homeless woman and she was leaning against a building. And I'm walking one direction about to pass her when a man is coming toward me from the opposite direction. And he's got two coffees in his hand and he's just strolling along, walking. And without missing a beat, he leans over, he hands one of the coffees to this homeless woman and he smiles at her and just kind of keeps on walking. And he walks up to me and I'm ecstatic because I'm like, I see kindness. So I do the only thing I can think and I wink at him. And he gets this huge smile on his face because he knows I'm winking at him because I saw him do the kindness. And so I'm like giggling and smiling and he's kind of laughing and smiling. And then I walk past the homeless woman and I say, good morning. And she's smiling and it was such a perfect example because research says that kindness works as a trifecta. The giver, the receiver, and the witness all benefit from the release of these four great feel-good chemicals when you do receive or see an act of kindness. And oh my goodness, those chemicals were pumping through my body. I was so excited. So that's why, you know, we want to catch people in the act and be really on the lookout around us for kindness.
So you and I are both familiar with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
And so coming up in 2 days, I think it's on the 23rd. I think it's in 2 days. Am I right about that, Paul Perot? It's Kindness Day in 2 days?
You are correct, yes.
Okay, so in 2 days, the state of Pennsylvania has set aside a whole day for a day of kindness. And so I think it would be really fun if we set aside a portion of the show that day to just talk about kindness. Would you be up for that?
Oh my goodness. Yes, let's do it. And everyone needs to listen because everyone's going to go out after listening for an hour about kindness or however long it is and be like, yes, the world is good. And that's all we want to be reminded about, isn't it, Carmen?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love this. I love this notion that the giver and the receiver and the witness are all affected by kindness because that's really sort of the contagious effect of kindness. And I would love to be you know, stirring that up in culture. Gossip gets stirred up all the time. Let's be stirring up kindness.
Okay, and I'm going to work on a new word for you by
Thursday.
You have
2 days.
Okay.
All right. That, I feel like that's a good thing for us to set ourselves to. So Nicole J. Phillips, you guys can check her out online at NicoleJPhillips.com. You can check out her book, Kindness is Courageous. She's going to be back with us on Thursday. We're going to spend some time just talking about kindness, devoting ourselves to a day of kindness. Along with the folks in Pennsylvania who have set aside that particular day in celebration of the life of the guy we know as Mr. Rogers. All right. So thank you, Nicole. Thank you. Have a blessed day and go catch somebody doing good.
Will do. You too, Carmen.
Thank you. So we talked a little bit earlier with Dr. Rosemary Stein about the rising suicide rates among young people in the country, but there is on the other end of life also a genuinely tragic storyline, trend line. I hope it's not a trend. And that is a spike in suicides, a rising trend in suicides among older adults, particularly those living in what you and I would call care facilities, living in assisted places where you can get some assistance when you are a senior adult. And so what's going on here? Why are people despairing of life when they're young? Why are people despairing of life when they're old, when they have, you know, frankly, the most opportunity to pass along a legacy to emerging generations? My guess is that the social isolation that they are experiencing, they feel they genuinely feel as if they are not only disconnected, but without any value or worth. And I think we as Christians absolutely have to engage this conversation. I think we have to get over our own hurdles of defensiveness, because that's going to be our first response. Our first response is going to be, you know, that older people are in the facilities that they are in because that's best for them. And I think that at some point we have to recognize that in many families, the truth of the matter is it's easiest for us. It's not necessarily best for them. It's easiest for us. And so this is a hard conversation. I'm just admitting right out here in the open, this is a really hard conversation. It's an essential conversation. It's an important conversation. This is not intended to in any way, shape, or form produce guilt in the hearts and minds and lives of families whose senior members are now living in assisted care facilities of some kind. But it is to say we still bear a huge responsibility to love them and care for them and visit with them frequently, to know what's going on in their heart, to be sure that they have wonderful relationships, even at this stage of life, at every stage of life. And so the questions that we need to be asking, and we ask this question on the front end of life. I mean, we are having lots of conversations in this country about when life begins and what it means to be human on the front end of life. It's the same conversation on the other end of life. When does life end? When does life cease to be meaningful? When does it cease to be meaningful when it ceases to be productive? Or does it cease to be meaningful when God says, you know, come home, come home, when God makes that determination? Who gets to decide when life begins and when it's right to die? We've talked with Johnny Erickson Tata on former occasions about that very question. She wrote a whole book on it. When is it right to die? But it's the right question to be asking. And it is a question about suffering, and it is a question about love, and it is a question about family, and it is a question about being together with another person through the valley of the shadow of death all the way to the end. And then the process of grief is that you and I walk back out of that valley after we have seen a person all the way home. So if you want to read about this, there are articles posted, like one called Lethal Plans When Senior Adults Turn to Suicide. But they don't really capture the conversation, obviously, from a Christian worldview. So you and I have to decide what is life? To whom does it belong? When does it end? Who rightly brings it to an end? And this is going to ultimately be a conversation about autonomy. It's going to be a conversation about recognizing who we are as image bearers of the living God and recognizing that life itself is a sacred trust. And so we're going to continue this conversation with each other in just a minute. But I want you to be thinking about here during this very brief break, I want you to be thinking about how you feel about getting old, how you feel about getting old alone, how you feel about getting old alone in the context of a culture that promotes social isolation. Because if you think about that for very long, you're going to be sad and you're going to be able to very quickly empathize with older adults who are living that reality today and who need us as members of the body of Christ to reconnect with them in significant ways. All right. So that conversation is up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So as Christians in a culture where suicide rates are rising in every demographic, across every age band, at every stage of life, you and I have to ask some very basic questions. If we are in the context of a culture that is suffering a Great Depression, I mean, right, that's the only way we can describe this. And it's not economic. But clearly, our culture is suffering a Great Depression. If so many people are taking their own lives. So as suicide rates rise, there are some basic questions that I think we have to ask about autonomy versus sovereignty. Like who governs your life and who governs life itself? We have to ask ourselves why the problem of suicide exists at all and why it's getting worse in what... by historical standards, would certainly be judged to be relatively good times. So what are our responses as people of faith, and how are we going to press into this particular cultural moment? So the headlines related to suicide are tragic. They are frequent. They are diverse. So just today, we have suicide stories of seniors, of high school seniors, of recent college graduates, of men and women in the prime of their life. We have suicide stories posted today of veterans and survivors of violence and older adults in assisted living facilities who are taking their own lives as a part of what PBS describes as lethal plans when senior adults turn to suicide. It's a pretty incredible story posted at pbs.org. So what's going on here? What's going on here? Well, the last year that we have comprehensive national numbers from the CDC, the Centers on Disease Control and Prevention, they posted them in 2018, so just last year, and the numbers are actually from 2016. But here's a line from the CDC. Suicide rates rose steadily in nearly every state from 1999 to 2016, often by as much as 30%. In 2016, we are told there are more than twice as many suicides as homicides in the United States. Does that surprise you? Did you know that? Were you aware that it is that epidemic? So in this last year that's fully recorded by the CDC statistics, which are, again, from 2016, 45,000 Americans age 10 or older died by their own hands. That is an increase of 25% since the year 1999. Think about that. 45,000 Americans age 10 or older died by their own hands. And there are some places where the numbers are actually not accurately reported. And that's one of the things revealed in the PBS Kaiser Health report related to older adults. Lots of folks die of undetermined causes in senior living facilities. And only increasingly are we looking to the question of whether or not those people took their own life. So increasingly, this is not seen as just a mental health problem, but as what the CDC recognizes as a public health problem. And as soon as you get to the vocabulary of public health or a public health problem, you're talking about something that has such a widespread pattern that it garners national attention. And so this has risen to the point of a national conversation because the CDC is now at the point where they are calling this a public health problem, public health crisis, public health emergency. Those are other phrases you will see related to suicide. It's also, I think, interesting that although the rising rates of suicide are directly and often indirectly linked to conversations about mental health, it's also really significant that the CDC's own report recognizes that the overwhelming majority of people do not have a diagnosable mental health issue prior to taking their own life. So it's only in what they call this psychological autopsy after the fact, where they are, you know, they are trying to get into the mind of a person who took their own life. It's only during this period of what they call psychological autopsy, where they determine that although, you know, less than half of those who commit suicide actually have a mental health diagnosis, they will say after the fact that 90% have evidence of a mental health condition. So what does that mean? And how, as Christians, should we process and interpret and speak to the secular observation about what we know is an issue of despair, isolation, loneliness, hopelessness, loss of identity, sense of that you don't belong, sense that you don't have any purpose? So we talk frequently here about the issues of identity, belonging, and purpose. And those are issues that are unresolved for folks who take their own life. If you don't know who you are and you don't know whose you are and you don't believe you have any purpose, then you are without hope. And you have this sense that life is not really worth the living. And so you and I, as people of faith, that's the conversation we have to press ourselves into. At every level of life, we have to press ourselves into that conversation with young people. We have to press ourselves into that conversation with older people. And we have to talk about, we have to connect the dots between all of the things that we talk about. We talk about social isolation. We talk about the search for meaning. We talk about suicide ideation and its glorification through shows like 13 Reasons Why. We talk about unresolved public trauma and through mass casualty events. We talk about the way that people attach meaning to relationships that are not going to give them meaning, or attach meaning to work that it cannot bear, or self-medicate through alcohol or drugs or pornography. Christians can actually see this list in light of the truth of fallen humanity, unresolved sin, relational brokenness, social isolation, family breakdown, the need for redemption. Yes, the need for redemption, personally and socially. So you and I have to talk about these things. We cannot be afraid to talk about these things. We cannot shy away from these conversations, and we must have these conversations redemptively with Jesus fully in view, reminding people who they are as image bearers of the living God, reminding people that all have sinned and fallen short of God's glory, but that's not where we live. We can live again. We are meant to be redeemed. The offer of redemption is available. Morning can come. The sun can rise again. You do not have to follow the darkness of this path unto death. That is the big lie, all right? That is the enemy coming to steal and destroy your life. Jesus comes that you might have life and have it abundantly, and yes, eternally, but full right here and right now. Under God's sovereignty, by his grace, with the fellowship of his people, living fully restored in a relationship with the Father, fully restored in a relationship with yourself, back in your right mind, cultivating the mind of Christ, and then, yes, in right relationship with other people. So this redemptive plan of God is not just for personal salvation, pie in the sky, you get to go and be with God in heaven forever. That is a part of it, yes, but it's also the redemption of real life in real relationships right now. Okay, friends, we got to take one more quick break here, and then we're going to have a really redemptive conversation in the next half hour with Bob Dalton from something called Sackcloth and Ashes. That is a conversation, trust me when I tell you, you don't want to miss. Indeed, AI is no replacement. Anything artificial is no replacement. We talked about that earlier with Dr. Rose. Artificial anything. Don't artificial relationships, artificial intelligence. Let's get real. Let's actually get real. Well, one of the people who I have recently met who is dealing with real issues today is named Bob Dalton. He is dealing with the real issue that people who are homeless are also often cold. And so he is addressing that. His own personal story is the story that underlies this this story about sackcloth and ashes, and how one person committed to a cause can make a real difference, and how you can participate in that as well. So that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Parents tend to pour a lot of time and effort into keeping the peace at home. But maybe we need to shift our thinking. Is conflict all that bad? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Mom, Dad, it's okay to have conflict with your teen as he matures. Do you honestly think you'd never have disagreements, or that he'd never try to question your values? As your teen becomes independent, he'll begin to think differently than you do. But as you engage in discussion rather than avoid it, you affirm that you'll always love him and spend time with him, even when your opinions differ. Hey, who said you needed to have a conflict-free relationship? God grants peace even in the imperfection and brings strength through the process.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
So sometimes you are at an event and you think you're there for one reason, and you really find out that you're there because God wants to reveal something to you. He wants to set a divine appointment. So I was at Q Ideas a few weeks ago, and I didn't expect to meet or hear the testimony of Bob Dalton. I didn't expect to be introduced to something called sackcloth and ashes, but I am thrilled that God brought our lives into intersection with each other, and I am thrilled to be able to share today with our listeners all across the U.S. And around the world via the Faith Radio app about sackcloth and ashes. So, Bob Dalton, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you for having me.
So, I would love for our listeners to have some of the experience that I had. So, will you simply tell us your story?
Yeah, absolutely. So, 5 years ago, my mom was going through a pretty difficult time. And she had lost a few close family members, her mother and her brother. And those were the two people that she was closest to. Those people were her pillars. They would be the people that she goes to in, you know, financial need or emotional need. And they had both passed away. And it really sent her in a downhill spiral where she couldn't keep a job. She became a little bit emotionally unstable. And she called me up one day and she's like, Bob, I'm doing it. I'm going to move across the United States and start my life over. And she booked a one-way plane ticket with a suitcase and two pairs of interview clothes and moved from Oregon to Florida. Once she got over to Florida, she thought her aunt would take her in. Her aunt didn't take her in, so she ended up sleeping on beaches and benches. And that completely changed my paradigm of how I view the homeless community. And came out of nowhere for me. You know, I was always the guy that actually would drive by folks on the street and whisper under my breath, go get a job. And I had always been passionate about helping social issues. Homelessness was never even on the list. And when my mom ended up in that situation, it completely changed my paradigm because my mom has two college degrees. She's the hardest working woman that I know. And she raised my sister and I by herself. And so her story, her journey of ending up on the streets and really fighting to come back from that and even experiencing it in the first place inspired me to actually do something about it. And so I called my local homeless shelters and asked what I could do or what I could give. And they said, we need blankets. And I came up with the idea that for every blanket that somebody purchases from our company, we'll donate a blanket to that person's local homeless shelter. And I wanted to take the one-for-one business model that Blake did an incredible job bringing into the business industry through Tom's, but I wanted to take it a step further and localize it. So no matter where you buy a blanket in the United States, we'll actually send a blanket to a homeless shelter in your community. So if you buy a blanket in Austin, Texas, we'll send a blanket to a shelter in Austin. If you live in Nashville and you buy a blanket, we'll send a blanket to a shelter in Nashville. And we work with over 500 homeless shelters across the United States, being able to provide blankets to them.
So, Bob, let's dig around a little bit in this, this story and in this experience. Because some people might assume that, oh, well, Bob was already in the blanket business and he just, you know, sort of converted that over, you know, to have this do-gooder campaign model. That's not exactly how it happened. You weren't exactly a textile person. You didn't have a blanket business prior to this. So I love that part of the story. Will you take us to that part of the story?
Yeah, for sure. I never thought I would be in the blanket game. It's I was never fascinated with fabrics or anything like that. Blankets were just the need. And so I found myself where most people find themselves when they have really good ideas. I came up with the idea and I did absolutely nothing about it. And shortly after I had the idea of Sackcloth and Ashes, and my mom was still going through some really difficult things, and I was kind of at a crossroads in my life, I found myself sitting in my car and, you know, just having one of those what is the meaning of life moments. And my seat was leaned back all the way. My knees were up on my steering wheel. And I look up and I had a coffee cup that was resting on my knee. And on the coffee sleeve, it said, "What are you waiting for?" And for me, that was, there's just a lot of irony in that. But that was really like my now moment. That's where I started my car and I went straight down to Joann's Fabric to buy a sewing machine and a roll of fabric. And I realized very quickly that I cannot sew. And I started outsourcing that to seamstresses in my community. And they would start making me blankets. And I'd drive up and down the Oregon coast and walk into shops and, you know, say, you know, here's why you need to buy these blankets over the blankets on your shelf, because I'm going to drive down and donate all the blankets in my trunk. And completely grassroots, you know, bootstrap this thing from the ground up, because I didn't know anything about business. I didn't have a business degree. I didn't have any marketing experience. But the only thing I knew about business was the power of perception. And that was just to get people to become aware of what I was doing. So I got into 20 shops immediately. And I hired the best photographers that I could. And on June 1st, 2014, sackclothandashes.com went live. And
I want to pause there, because I want people to go to the website, because it is beautiful. One of the things that I genuinely appreciate about what you're doing is that you as an individual, Bob Dalton, are not trying to do it all. You are capitalizing on the gifts, talents, and abilities of other people in the body, people who know how to make a blanket and know how to, you know how to sew. You are capitalizing on the gifting of photographers. You're capitalizing on the reality that there's a global community and there are beautiful places where people need blankets. And people who travel to those places and are driving around in their Subarus and are shopping at World Market, those people need blankets too. And they are in a position to buy a blanket that is of, you know, significant enough value that it pays for another blanket. And I think that is, this is a wonderful for-profit prophetic way of doing things. And I think it's inspiring. And I want people to check it out during the break. So Bob and I are going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. And in particular, we're going to talk about how you can become engaged. We're going to talk about what it means to blanket America and how that happens through you in Bloomington, Minnesota, catching the vision to blanket Bloomington. Or maybe for you in Bismarck, catching the vision to blanket Bismarck. Maybe you live in a more rural part of our listening area and you want to blanket Becker County or Benton County or Big Stone County or Blue Earth County. There's lots of counties out there that start with B in our listening area. So maybe your city is too small. I want you to imagine all the good that your church might do, not only to serve the homeless, but to actually have your community recognize that the church is engaged in something good, genuinely good. So all of that up next with Bob Dalton. Well, I will walk by faith, even when I cannot see. I'm talking with Bob Dalton from Sackcloth and Ashes. You absolutely need to visit sackclothandashes.com. Bob, let's be sure people are making the connection here. Why is it called Sackcloth and Ashes?
Yeah, so the idea is for every blanket somebody purchases, we donate a blanket to your local homeless shelter. And so Sackcloth and Ashes was a really fitting name. It's ancient Jewish symbolism, which means mourning and repentance. And so the idea was every time somebody that wraps themselves in a sackcloth and ashes blanket, it symbolized mourning over the homeless population and repentance by contributing to a homeless shelter in your area.
So this is not solving homelessness. This is serving mm-hmm. those who are homeless. Can you make that distinction for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely am not the guy that's going to change the issue of homelessness. My goal is to use our platform to highlight the people and the organizations that are changing the issue of homelessness. And blankets are the third party object that's actually connecting me with a lot of the people on the ground level across the United States.
So you guys partner with, on the one hand, like I'm just like imagining you reaching out your hands in two directions. On the one hand, you partner with what I would describe as very large for-profit corporations and businesses. You also obviously partner with churches and others who are interested in blanketing their communities. But on the other hand, you are partnering with homeless shelters, rescue mm-hmm. missions. And you're doing that, you know, by taking a blanket and passing it literally from your right hand to your left hand and on to others. What I love about this, talk about what happens or what has happened. Tell us the story of a blanket drop where somebody from the for-profit world really had a prophetic heart change when they saw and experienced this genuine doing of good, because this is transformative and opens up conversations for us as Christians with people who, you know, this is not their thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So in June 1st, 2018 was our 4-year anniversary, and we launched our first major campaign called Blanket the United States. And our goal is to donate 1 million blankets to homeless shelters by 2024. And we're going to do that by partnering with people individually who buy a blanket on our website. We donate a blanket to their local shelter. And we're going to do that by partnering with companies that want to give a quality gift as a closing gift or a gift to their employees. They can now give a blanket as a gift and make a difference in their local homeless shelter. And so within like a week of launching that campaign, we got a deal done with Subaru in Oregon. They bought 2,500 blankets. And for every brand new Subaru that is purchased, it comes with the Sackcloth and Ashes blanket. And in doing so, we were able to donate 2,500 blankets to shelters in Oregon. Shortly after that, World Market stepped up and bought 5,000. We were able to donate 5,000 blankets to shelters in California. And I got to bring the CEO of World Market to a blanket drop. And a blanket drop is where we go to a shelter, we pass out blankets, we serve food. There's an actual experience to be had. And then I share like a little 5 to 10 minute message of hope, and we just love on people, and we get to learn about the programs that are happening in those cities. So I got to take Jack Schwiffel, who's the CEO of World Market, to the Tenderloin of San Francisco, which is his city. And we got to learn about a program called City Impact that's making a massive difference on the streets. And Jack came up to me and was like, this is one of the most powerful things that myself and my team have ever experienced. And I know that Jack is still going back and serving quite often in his local homeless shelter with his wife. And it's exciting to see for me, because I'm just a bridge builder. I'm able to connect people with influence and resources, and Sackcloth and Ashes and these blankets are a vehicle to connect them with the people and the organizations that are making a difference on a ground level in their city.
So, Bob, there are a lot of people listening to us right now in the Twin Cities mm-hmm. of Minnesota, and they're thinking to themselves, it's summertime, man. It is Memorial Day mm-hmm. weekend. This is not the time for me to be thinking about blankets. Actually, this is exactly mm-hmm. the time that we want people in the upper Midwest of the United States listening all across the Faith Radio Network. We want you to actually be thinking about blankets, because you know winter is coming. It is always coming mm-hmm. where you live. And mm-hmm. And so this is the time for you to get with the corporation of which you are a part, or your church, and really cast the vision for blanketing your city, blanket Bloomington, Blanket Brooklyn Park, blanket your county, blanket your state, participate in blanketing the United States of America. Maybe, I mean, I think of all of the really very, you know, like huge, enormous corporations that are based in the Twin Cities. So if you are, you work with United Healthcare or Target or Best Buy or 3M or U.S. Bank Corps or Super Value or General Mills, I mean, the list is long. Land O'Lakes, I mean, Hormel, Thrivent. I mean, I'm getting a little shout out here. Polaris, get a little shout out here. Toro. If I buy a Toro, I need a blanket. And there you go. And I would love to be able to really encourage, really call forth people in business who are in a position to partner with Sackcloth and Ashes. We want to call you out and we want to say, you know, Menards, we want to say, you know, not only could you carry the blanket like World Market is carrying the blankets, but maybe you could consider this kind of partnership where, you know, you're giving a closing gift anyway, right, of some kind. If you're not, other companies are, so you need to start. So there's this closing gift model. If you're not familiar with that, get familiar with that, and then have your closing gift be a Sackcloth and Ashes blanket. Because on the one hand, you're going to bless your client. You're going to actually communicate to them that you value the human dignity of those in your community, and you're going to be able to say to that person, hey, I'm giving you a blanket, but you know what? Our local shelter is getting a blanket as well. How cool is that? That corporation then gets to participate in the blanket drop in your local community. And trust me when I tell you, hearts are changed. Hearts are changed. This is the way the gospel goes forth in good works. And so, Bob, is there anything that you want to add as a shout out? How do people connect with you if they want to blanket their community, blanket their county, blanket the country?
Yeah, they can reach out to me direct at bob@sackclothandashes.com. And, you know, the one thing I want to say, you know, a lot of people ask, you know, what's the one thing that, you know, I could leave with folks and be able to use my platform. The one thing I want to say is we just have to simply change and reframe our language from homeless people to people that are homeless. And if we can get millions of people around the United States and around the world to just simply reframe that language, people that are homeless, they're people first. We have to lead with identity. It's going to truly start a conversation and really start to see change in our communities when we see them as people first. They're not projects, they're not objects, they're people first. And that is the mission that I'm on, is to help reframe that language and to really highlight the people and the organizations that are doing incredible work. And thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, Bob, thank you so much. That's Bob Dalton. You can reach out to him directly, bob@sackclothandashes.com. You can also visit the website, sackclothandashes.com. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back. So on this Tuesday, May the 21st, I want to encourage you to consider all the ways that you might not only do good, but you might catch someone else doing something good. I want to be the provocateur today of acts of kindness in the lead up to Kindness Day, which is going to be Thursday. So if you're not a person who is prone to acts of kindness, I want you to consider that today. I want you to consider crossing the street to help someone, or certainly not passing by someone who's on your side of the street, to whom you might simply smile or give a cup of coffee or a cup of cool water, right? There are ways to serve that cost us very, very little. All right, friends, have a great day and God bless. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.